"Arthur Radley just stays in the house, that's all," said Miss Maudie. "Wouldn't you stay in the house if you didn't want to come out?"
"Yes'm, but I want to come out. Why doesn't he?"
Miss Maudie's eyes narrowed. "You know that story as well as I do."
"I never heard why, though. Nobody ever told me why."
Miss Maudie settled her bridge work.
"You know, old Mr. Radley was a foot-washing Baptist."
"That's what you are, ain't it?"
"My shell's not that hard, child. I'm just a Baptist."
"Don't you all believe in foot-washing?"
"We do."
"At home, in the bathtub."
"But we can't have communion with you all."
Apparently, deciding that it was easier to define primitive baptistry than closed communion, Miss Maudie said,
"Foot washers believe anything that's pleasure is a sin. Did you know some of them came out of the woods one Saturday and passed by this place and told me and my flowers were going to hell?"
"Your flowers, too?"
"Yes, ma'am, they'd burn right with me. They thought I spent too much time in God's outdoors and not enough time inside the house reading the Bible." My confidence in pulpit gospel lessened at the vision of Miss Maudie stewing forever in various Protestant hells. True enough, she had an acid tongue in her head, and she did not go about the neighborhood doing good, as did Miss Stephanie Crawford. But while no one with a grain of sense trusted Miss Stephanie, Jim and I had considerable faith in Miss Maudie. She had never told on us, had never played cat and mouse with us. She was not at all interested in our private lives. She was our friend. How so reasonable a creature could live in peril of everlasting torment was incomprehensible.
"That ain't right, Miss Maudie. You're the best lady I know." Miss Maudie grinned.
"Thank you, ma'am. Thing is, foot washers think women are a sin by definition. They take the Bible literally, you know."
"Is that why Mr. Arthur stays in the house? To keep away from women?"
"I've no idea."
"It doesn't make sense to me. Looks like if Mr. Arthur was hankering after heaven, he'd come out on the porch at least. Atticus says God's loving folks like you love yourself."
Miss Maudie stopped rocking, and her voice hardened. "You are too young to understand it," she said, "but sometimes the Bible in the hand of one man is worse than a whiskey bottle in the hand of, oh, of your father."
I was shocked. "Atticus doesn't drink whiskey," I said. "He never drunk a drop in his life."
"No'm." "Yes, he did. He said he drank some one time and didn't like it."
Miss Maudie laughed. "Wasn't talking about your father," she said. "What I meant was, if Atticus Finch drank until he was drunk, he wouldn't be as hard as some men are at their best."
"There are just some kind of men who are so busy worrying about the next world, they've never learned to live in this one, and you can look down the street and see the results."
"Do you think they're true? All those things they say about Mr. Arthur?"
"What things?"
I told her.
"That is 3/4 colored folks and 1/4 Stephanie Crawford," said Miss Maudie grimly. "Stephanie Crawford even told me once she woke up in the middle of the night and found him looking in the window at her."
I said, "What did you do, Stephanie? Move over in the bed and make room for him?"
That shut her up for a while.
I was sure it did. Miss Maudie's voice was enough to shut anybody up.
"No, child," she said, "that is a sad house. I remember Arthur Radley when he was a boy. He always spoke nicely to me, no matter what folks said he did. Spoke as nicely as he knew how."
"You reckon he's crazy?"
Miss Maudie shook her head.
"If he's not, he should be by now. The things that happen to people we never really know. What happens in houses behind closed doors? What secrets?
Atticus don't ever do anything to Jim and me in the house that he don't do in the yard," I said, feeling it my duty to defend my parent. "Gracious, child, I was raveling a thread, wasn't even thinking about your father. But now that I am, I'll say this. Atticus Finch is the same in his house as he is on the public streets. How'd you like some fresh pound cake to take home?"
"I liked it very much."
Next morning when I awakened, I found Jim and Dill in the backyard deep in conversation. When I joined them, as usual, they said, "Go away." "Will not. This yard's as much mine as it is yours, Jim Finch. I got just as much right to play in it as you have."
Dill and Jim emerged from a brief huddle. "If you stay, you've got to do what we tell you," Dill warned.
"Well," I said, "who's so high and mighty all of a sudden? If you don't say you'll do what we tell you, we ain't going to tell you anything," Dill continued.
"You act like you grew 10 inches in the night."
"All right, what is it?"
Jim said placidly, "We are going to give a note to Boo Radley."
"Just how?"
I was trying to fight down the automatic terror rising in me.
It was all right for Miss Maudie to talk. She was old and snug on her porch. It was different for us.
Jim was merely going to put the note on the end of a fishing pole and stick it through the shutters. If anyone came along, Dill would ring the bell. Dill raised his right hand. In it was my mother's silver dinner bell.
"I'm going around to the side of the house," said Jim.
"We looked yesterday from across the street, and there's a shutter loose. Think maybe I can make it stick on the windowsill at least."
"Jim, now you're in it and you can't get out of it. You'll just stay in it, Miss Pris."
"Okay, okay, but I don't want to watch."
"Jim, somebody was..."
"Yes, you will. You'll watch the back end of the lot, and Dill's going to watch the front of the house and up the street, and if anybody comes, he'll ring the bell. That clear?"
"All right, then. What'd you write him?"
Dill said, "We're asking him real politely to come out sometimes and tell us what he does in there."
We said we wouldn't hurt him, and we'd buy him an ice cream.
"You all have gone crazy. He'll kill us."
Dill said, "It's my idea. I figure if he'd come out and sit a spell with us, he might feel better."
"How do you know he don't feel good?"
"Well, how'd you feel if you'd been shut up for 100 years with nothing but cats to eat? I bet he's got a beard down to here. Like your daddy's? He ain't got a beard, he..."
Dill stopped as if trying to remember.
"Uh-huh, gotcha," I said. "You said before you were off the train good your daddy had a black beard. If it's all the same to you, he shaved it off last summer." "Yeah, and I've got the letter to prove it. He sent me $2, too."
"Keep on. I reckon he even sent you a mounted police uniform. That never showed up, did it?"
"You just keep on telling him, son."
Dill Harris could tell the biggest ones I ever heard. Among other things, he had been up in a mail plane 17 times. He had been to Nova Scotia, he had seen an elephant, and his granddaddy was Brigadier General Joe Wheeler and left him his sword.
"You all hush," said Jim. He scuttled beneath the house and came out with a yellow bamboo pole. "Reckon this is long enough to reach from the sidewalk? Anybody who's brave enough to go up and touch the house hadn't ought to use a fishing pole," I said. "Why don't you just knock the front door down?"
"This is different," said Jim. "How many times do I have to tell you that?"
Dill took a piece of paper from his pocket and gave it to Jim. The three of us walked cautiously toward the old house. Dill remained at the light pole on the front center of the lot, and Jim and I edged down the sidewalk parallel to the side of the house. I walked beyond Jim and stood where I could see around the curve.
"All clear," I said. "Not a soul in sight."
Jim looked up the sidewalk to Dill, who nodded.